It is time for another journey deep into the lining of the magical talking hat. Hat wranglers Tony and William reach into the yawning chasm that is the hat and pull forth the questions you have posed. Will they tire of your question quickly? Is your name Azhatalin? Then perhaps they will, but then perhaps not. But that will remain a mystery until we venture into the magical talking hat.
You remember when we used to start it and I would just say like a fake punchline to a joke?
Mm-hmm.
I miss those days. That was easier. I should probably.
Easier than what?
Than coming up with actual things to talk about.
We don't have to do that.
I know, but I do. Instead, I could go back to the other.
Okay.
So he says it only works if you know how to putt. So I learned something today that I found fascinating. But apparently I'm like the last person to know this. But then I remembered you exist, so you might be the last person.
I might be.
So I could tell
you. I very likely am.
So, you familiar with the song Loving You? With a famously high F in it?
Yeah.
Loving you easy because you're
honestly, the first time I ever was made aware of that song.
Was the South Park episode?
Was the South Park
episode. Absolutely. Yep, yep, yep.
My brother showed me when I was...
Yeah, but it's a real song. It's a good song. It's a famous song. Do you know who it's about?
About? No.
Yes. The you in Loving You.
I think someone might have told me once, but I don't remember.
It's actress Maya Rudolph. When she was 2, the song was written and performed by her mother.
I'm certain I didn't know that.
And it was as a lullaby to her 2-year-old daughter.
I'm certain I didn't know
and
that.
And apparently in the original recording, you can hear at the end, she actually says Maya, Maya, Maya at the end.
Really?
Yeah. I don't remember that part. But
the funny thing is, my wife was just playing some video on YouTube with her in it. Maya Randolph. That's just an interesting coincidence.
It is funny that it came up.
We don't usually watch.
Because we were just finishing The Good Place.
Yeah.
And she's in that. And then I saw this article that was completely unrelated today that mentioned this.
Hmm.
So it was also a funny coincidence. Because, yeah, Maya Rudolph doesn't play a large role in my life, generally speaking.
Ours either. I mean, in fact,
I like her.
In fact, the she was picking the SNL videos that she wanted to watch based on, I think, Kristen Wiig being in it because she likes her.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
She's really excited about her being in the next Wonder Woman movie.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And Rudolph wasn't in any of those videos except this one right before I came over.
And now you know why.
Wow. What a coincidence.
Yes. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Magical Talking Hat Podcast, the only podcast in the world that requires you to keep a moist towelette handy while you listen. Other podcasts recommend it, some. Mm-hmm. We're the only ones that require it.
We don't do very much enforcement, though.
And we don't talk about why. You'll know. You'll know.
Wait for it.
I'm Tony.
And I'm William, and this is episode 440.
All right. You're back on the horse.
Got it.
Been having some troubles the last few weeks.
I have been, but I got
kind of a mess.
I'm here.
I mean,
I'm ready.
People have been talking.
Have they been?
I mean, statistically speaking.
Okay. A
it would be weird if the last couple weeks no one spoke. Sorry, it was unrelated to my earlier statement about you not being good. I was just mentioning people have been talking.
I think I figured that out.
Yeah. That is my favorite, like, shitty, unhelpful joke to do when somebody's like, does anyone know such and such? I'm like, well, clearly somebody knows. All right. If you're just joining us for the first time, it's not going to get a lot better. Ears out of the show works. We have a hat. It is magic, specifically in that it has its own email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com. Folks like yourselves, cool people, awesome people, also Azhatalin, write in to that email address, themagicaltalkinghat@gmail.com, with little notes, comments, topics, questions, things like that. The hat, magically, on its own, transmogrifies those emails into little note cards that manifest physically within the hat itself. We, its equiline servants. Does that start with an A? It might be.
Like the description of someone to have
equine,
like
equine and aquiline. Those a, are the, so.
As an A, yeah.
I guess we're equine servants then.
Eagle-like.
We're horses.
What that name no, is. Aquiline?
Oh, maybe. Equine, we're horses.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're horse servants. Draw the note cards out of the hat at random, read them on the air, talk about them till we're bored. Do that for about an hour. That's the whole show except the parts that aren't, which is most of the show. How you doing?
Good.
All right, then.
Got to go to the fair, after all.
You did get to go to the fair.
I didn't go on Monday, as it turns out.
Oh, my goodness, you lied to me.
Well, that was my mom's birthday, so that was like a perfect time to go. But
yes.
But there was going to be storms and stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we weren't sure, so we thought, okay, well, let's do it the next day. And so we went
Tuesday
instead, and my brother Scott went with us.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it was a good time. I'm glad we got to go. It was the only disappointing thing about it was one thing I like to do. I would travel 2 hours to the fair just to go to the agricultural building and look at all of the fruit and vegetable competitions and then leave. I would go just for that. Obviously, I don't have to do that. I can be there for 5 hours or 6 hours like I usually am. But when I got there on Tuesday and I went in to the agriculture building, first thing, it's what I always do, first thing, to see the vegetable and fruit competitions, they were judging them, which meant it was all roped off.
Oh.
Now, you could see from a distance things, you know.
But still, you wanted to get up close.
I like to get up close.
Give them a sniff.
Well, no, I just like to see because, actually, I'm nearsighted and I haven't had any glasses for like 3 years now. I'll probably get some here soon, but so I couldn't really see them from a distance.
Could
anyway.
You wait until the judging was over and come back?
Well, that's what we thought we would do. We left mm-hmm. and did some other things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Here it was, we'd been at the fair for like 5 hours. It was getting close to 2 o'clock. Judging still going on.
Holy crap. It must have been a tight race this year.
Well, it does take a long time. I've been there before when it was happening, but I could swear when that happened before, in the afternoon, especially the later afternoon, they were done, and I could go, and then it just turned into the last thing I did for the day instead of the first. So it turns out I didn't really get to see all of the vegetables and stuff like I wanted to. My wife took pictures from up, you know, there's sort of a balcony that goes around the agricultural building where there are vendors and stuff. And so she went up there and took pictures from above or whatever. And so when we got home, I could, like, you know, zoom in. And I could see things pretty well, but not as well
same,
as I usually
no.
like. But the thing is,
they should have somebody up there selling, like, opera glasses.
Well, here's the thing. The reason I like to look at this stuff is because, you know, they've got little tags telling you, you know, where the person who's entering the potatoes or the eggplant or whatever it is, where they're from. So I get a good idea of, you know, how garden crops are doing across the state that way, which I just like doing that. I enjoy it. So, and it looked like...
How are we friends? I don't get...
It looked like it was a good year for just about everything, especially cabbages, but I wish I'd gotten closer just so I could see, you know. Like, it could have been only one part of the state had really nice-looking cabbages this year, or only one part of the state had really nice-looking tomatoes.
We'll never know.
And also, the field corn display was down there, so I didn't get to see that. I like to know, you know, how the yields went this past year.
To know how our cows are eating?
Yeah, exactly, our beef cattle.
Yeah.
But it was all right. It was fun to be there at all, because I wasn't even sure we were going to go, and to be there with Scott was nice. So.
Scott of Screenshots fame.
That's right. My only older sibling. All the other siblings are younger than me.
And refused to go to the state fair with you.
No, they go sometimes. 2 years ago, my sister went with us. My only sister. She's the youngest.
Did you eat anything weird?
No.
Did you see anything weird to eat?
No. I saw something online that listed, you know, every year they come, certain news outlets come out with like the top 10 things that you should make sure you eat at the fair. And they're not things you're going to see. Well, some of them are, but most of them aren't things you're going to see like just a, like there's a stand serving this. It's something that one of the more permanent.
Like you have to know who to talk to.
No. There's several
the password.
Semi-permanent places that serve food, like the Beef Council, where they serve food is always that. It's not okay. anything different. So the Beef Council might come up with some special, I don't know, steak dish that they're going to serve that year, and you, or something that, that a chef would have prepared that's fancy. And so if you go there, you might see it on the menu or whatever.
Deep fried Oreo steak.
But that's different than the vendors that are clearly in like mobile.
Yeah.
And they have the same stuff every year, whoever they are. And that's mostly what we saw. Like it's been very popular for probably over a decade now. There's one place you can go to get vegetarian corn dogs. So I always get that. And this year,
I love corn dogs.
This year, that place had deep fried avocado slices.
Ooh.
And they were very
good.
Oh,
one of the presidential candidates was eating some of those.
Really good.
I don't remember who it was, but somebody was eating those.
That
would be nice. I would eat those.
Yeah, they were excellent.
That would be tricky. I would think you would have to eat them real fast.
No? Why?
I would think they would get soggy.
Oh, I don't know. I mean, when they served them, they were pretty hot.
Because they're so soft already.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, but when they served them, they were pretty hot.
So you had to let them cool.
Had to let them cool, and then I ate them pretty quickly after that, so maybe.
I don't know. No, that does sound good.
I didn't feel like I... And the seasoning and spices were just right. It was fantastic.
Well, it's just... I like a good... and this is going to sound weird, but other people like to... deep fried squishy stuff, like, you know, like jalapeno poppers and things like that. And most commonly it's a sweet thing, like there's cream cheese in it or whatever like that. I like this idea though, because that's going to be a similar texture. And I love avocado.
The last time I was there, I had their peanut butter and jelly sandwich deep fried on a stick.
Cory Booker had that this year.
Yeah, it was, and
because he's a vegan apparently.
They were also selling that this year, but I didn't have it. But it's really rich. I mean, I could only eat a little bit of it, and I was totally full. But it was good. I mean, it tasted good.
Yeah.
I mean, if you like peanut butter and jelly, which I do.
That I would think that would be.
Do you like peanut butter and jelly?
I do like peanut butter and jelly.
Well, you'd probably like it because
I can't imagine I would not.
How come you don't go to the fair when there's all this cool food? Oh, you probably shouldn't because of your diabetes or something?
No, that would be my only reason to go, and I'm not going to drive that far. Like, if you want to, I can make you a list, and you can bring it back to me afterward.
I don't know if it would be as good.
Bring back the vendors. Get a trailer hitch on your Prius, and bring back the vendors.
I mean, there are people who go to the fair just to eat the food, and that might sound like, well, that's a very short trip, but they make a whole day of it.
Yeah.
Which means they sometimes will split something. Like, they won't eat the whole peanut butter and jelly thing. They'll split it, and then they'll eat a little bit
and
of this.
And you're walking around and stuff like
and
that.
Yeah, exactly. So
I grew up with the State Fair, the Oregon State Fair.
Well, yeah, sure you did.
And I worked there, but also before then. We went every year.
Yeah.
And when I was little enough, whatever, your whole life is old people taking you places you don't get a say in. And then you get older and you're into the rides.
Sure.
Other than learning how many tickets can I have. All right, great. I did it. And then I get older, a little bit into the food. But at a certain point, it's just really hot and really crowded.
Mm-hmm.
And everything smells like manure.
Well, I mean, I guess.
And.
Or money, as we call it. Back on the
yeah
farm. Everything smells like money.
That's a that ain't right. I'm just imagining y'all trying to pay with poop.
Smells like
money. And there's just not much going for me.
Well, right, but I mean, of course,
I don't care about much of the stuff there.
I like to see. I mean, I go to the agricultural building first and foremost. I like to go to the cultural center because you know, it's the competitions there are in fine arts and photography and miniatures and dollhouses and things like that.
Yeah, I don't care
so
about
I,
any of that.
I like to see what Iowans are doing, you know, with their gardens and with, you know, and some of the paintings that Iowans do in the fine arts area are really nice.
Yeah.
I like to go to the 4-H building to see what the kids are doing. I like to
really don't like that.
I like to go to their they have a display for all the needlepoint and quilt work and stuff like that. And people,
Trish likes that, no.
People who are designing and making dresses and things and costumes. And I like to see that. So I just like to see what Iowans are doing. And I'm always impressed by how much talent our state has, because some of it's pretty extraordinary.
I like to see the animals that I'm allowed to touch.
Yeah, my wife likes that too. In fact, we went through the
That's pretty much it.
We went through the horse barn, and there was a point where she could actually reach through and, like, you know, pet a horse or whatever. Because she used to own a horse. I don't know if you knew that. Not for very long.
Then one cold winter, they were out of food.
She was raised in the city, much to her chagrin. I mean, she always wanted to live in the country, wanted to do country things, and her parents relented after a while to let her have a horse, which she learned to tack and feed and all that stuff. She didn't own it for very long, though, because after a while, because she was a teenager living in town, she didn't feel like she took care of it very well. I mean, the place that they put it up in took care of it, but she wanted, that was the part of the whole point.
Yeah, yeah.
And she thought someone else would care for the horse better, but she did love it. She loved having it. So she's very much into horses and has been her whole life. So, you know, we like to go to a horse barn. It would be nice. A lot of times when we go, maybe some people don't know this, but they have a lot of their have to do with horses. When you go to the fair, they have events where they're showing animals, and there's like the 4-H kids will show the animal they raised, or there's also they have auctions for cattle and pigs and whatever, if farmers want to go there and buy some cattle and pigs or whatever. But the big shows are horse shows with people showing their riding abilities, including some rodeo type stuff like barrel racing. You can see that. There's also an event. I don't know if you know about this event, but there's this new kind of newish sport where people ride horses and shoot guns with a special kind of ammunition where it doesn't fire very far, and they'll shoot balloons.
Oh, I think I've seen this.
So they'll ride around barrels, but they have to shoot all these balloons, and they have to do it in a certain amount of time. So there's that event. The fair every year has something called the Cowgirl Queen, and it's all about young, you know, teenage girls dressing up in nice, like, Western outfits and grooming their horse nice and showing their equestrian skills in a thing or whatever. My wife would love to see something like that, but whenever we go, nothing's happening that day. It's like happy on the Sunday.
At the gate, they're like, "Aren't they here? Just shut it all down."
You know what we really should do is we should
look at the website and see what the schedule
is.
Well,
but I mean, the thing is, we usually just go on the first Sunday, and that's just when we go. And if they're not going to have anything, then we won't see it. This year, we went on the only day we kind of could go. So hopefully, in the future, we can look it up. And if it's on a weekday or something, well, then maybe she can just take it off, day off work.
Maybe so.
But we've never done it. We really should have. I should have been considerate enough, actually, to insist, hey, look, you can always get a day off work. Why don't we look for the day that has a horse show that you like, and we'll go then? Because she just defers to me because she knows I love the fair and all this stuff. And
you are kind of obsessive.
But I don't need to be inconsiderate about it, so.
Yeah. See, I like the animals as well. And if I watch the kids doing shit with the animals, that can be fun. And people watching is fun.
Yeah.
And the food is fun.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it for me. If the state fair was here and some friends who also didn't want to do very much were going, I probably would go. Depending on how much it cost. But I don't know. There's not a lot to draw me, and the older I get, the more I do not like crowds.
Well, it wasn't that crowded on Tuesday. It was very hot, though.
I never have liked that. That's some bullshit right there.
Most of the years I've gone,
the upshot, every once in a while, I realize, think about it, is I can just drink heavily. And when I'm drunk, I'm willing to put up with a lot more shit. If I was drunk enough, I would probably go and watch Vegetables with you. It'd be fine.
But you know what happens?
Look at that fucking giant zucchini.
There have been times
that's
where...
That's bigger than the kid who grew it. Oh, my God.
There have been times where...
Kid, climb up on that zucchini.
Where I'll go for, you know, 6-7 hours to the fair, and the rest of my family will attend with me in shifts.
That seems incredibly appropriate.
Someone will come in the morning, and they'll leave right, and someone else is coming. It's, oh, okay, my family...
Also, I feel like... we need to expand this in general. People need to give you attention in shifts. I'm willing to take a chunk. Like, you know, we can work out a rota.
That's nice of you.
Yeah.
That's a British thing that you just did there.
A rota?
Yeah.
Is it?
I think so. I've only heard that in British. Or rotary, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Rotary, I think of as the club or the old phone.
But that's what it showed.
But a rota is a... I've only ever heard it in people talking about... Like people in a house together organizing chores.
Yeah, it's a schedule.
Yeah.
A rotational schedule. So I've heard it called a rotary and a rota on British television.
Okay, I don't think I remember getting it from there. I think I've read it mostly, but I may have read it in British things. I read a lot of British things in addition to all the other British things I consume. So it's possible.
Anyway, how was your week?
Well, I just wanted to say up front, things... we're not doing our IHOP thing in August.
Okay.
It's going to wait. I thought it was going to be August. It's not going to happen in August. Right. August has gotten crazy. My week is mostly okay. I got sick.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So I was home yesterday. I didn't go to the gym this morning, but I went to work and I was like, I don't feel much better than yesterday, but I have to go. And then, as the day progressed, I felt better, so I'm starting to feel better now, so that's nice.
I mean, you still have your shirt on.
Yeah.
Your Thursday shirt.
Yeah, I mean, I went to work today.
Yep.
Played a lot of Assassin's Creed Origins. That's being fun. I'm really enjoying that. Watched a bunch of movies, most of which were pretty shitty. I saw one that I don't think was shitty. I saw it on the Shudder streaming service, but I think it might be floating around Netflix and other places. And it's called The Awakening. And it's a ghost story set in 1921. And it's this woman who's like a professional supernatural debunker.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this boarding school where a kid recently died, and they think it's tied to this old story about a ghost.
I think I've seen this.
They say. And I really enjoyed it because it's not just a ghost. Like, it really gets into sort of ideas of why do people believe in ghosts? Why do people want to believe in ghosts?
Sure.
And I found that fascinating. I will say, in the last half hour or so, it gets really fucking dark. Everything comes to a head and, like, fucked up shit happens. But I would recommend it if you're into that kind of movie. I enjoyed it quite a bit. There's some low-level jump scares, but, like, nothing that bugged me real bad. But, yeah, that was pretty decent. And, yeah, then I've just seen a lot of shitty ones. Trish and I finally finished third season of The Good Place. Which is good because we're like a month and a half from fourth season coming out.
We haven't seen the third season yet.
There is a part in the last episode of the third season. Made me tear up first time I watched it. Made me tear up this time when I watched it. I'm very excited for that fourth season. And then, last night, we watched the first episode of Pose.
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen Pose?
Nope, I haven't.
But
I know what you're talking about.
I thought we were going to watch it on Hulu, but Hulu, you have to have the live TV thing or whatever to do it.
Hmm.
But Netflix just has the first season.
Oh,
okay. So we just went there. Is interesting. For those not familiar, and I think we talked about this before when we talked about Paris is Burning, Pose is a fictional show set in the late 80s in New York, in the ballroom scene where gay, mostly people of color, would get together and have these, like, drag balls. And these houses formed up that were just sort of collectives that would take care of each other because there were a lot of just, like, homeless kids who'd been kicked out by their parents and things like that. And so this is a dramatization of that time period. And I was prepared for this to be really rough, and I'm sure it's going to be. it was not as rough as I thought. I enjoyed it more than I was traumatized by it. Trish, the producer, said there was a lot of it that made her feel very uncomfortable. I mean, I think she's going to keep watching, but I think it was right. And it's going to be, because it's, the truth is not pretty about that time. But there's some great stuff out of it. It has some incredible performers, including a lot of people who were in the movie Saturday Church, which I really loved. It's a lot of the same performers, I think, because trans women of color actors are hard to come by. And they're great in it too. It also sort of famously has Billy Porter in it. And he's doing a great job. It has a bunch of people just like snuck in there. Like there's a dude who's one of the main characters' bosses, and he's this like rich mocha guy. James Vanderbeek, aka Dawson from Dawson's Creek.
Oh, yeah, I don't know.
And then like one of our main characters is married to Kate Mara, who was in House of Cards and was Sue Storm in the most recent shitty Fantastic Four and was in The Circle and all that stuff. So it's really funny just pulling out these sort of random people in there. But I'm pretty pleased so far, and I'm kind of excited for that. It's very weird because we had just recently watched Paris is Burning, so I was judging the portrayal. I can't shake the fact. It's Ryan Murphy who's making it. The guy who did Glee, the guy who does American Horror Story.
Okay.
And a couple other people who are involved in the producing and stuff like that. And so I'm not saying they do a bad job. I'm saying I can't get out of the back of my head that this whole thing is the invention and direct under the direction of three white dudes.
Mm.
It feels weird. But they're doing a great job. But yeah, if you watch it, I will say there is about 10 minutes before the opening credits in the first episode.
Hmm.
I did not like those 10 minutes. And not they're like traumatizing. I thought they did a very poor portrayal. And I thought the sort of plot points that were sort of fast pacing were very unbelievable to me. So like those first 10 minutes, I'm like, this show is going to be stupid. But then it wasn't. And so that was good.
That's good.
It also reminded me how much I love Running Up That Hill by Kate Bush. It has an amazing soundtrack overall. But that song sort of plays a role in it. It came up several times. And so today I grabbed it off of the Apple Tunes and was listening to it like crazy. I might be a bigger Kate Bush fan than I realized.
I used to like her back in the day. I mean, I don't really.
Yeah, she's still going. That was amazing to me. I think of her as like an 80s thing. But
yeah,
she's still going.
Hmm.
And like putting out new albums and stuff. So, and also when I was looking her up again, there's like 1,000 musicians who credit her as one of their influences.
Like Tori Amos.
And it's a bunch of musicians I like. Yeah, so I'm like, all right, I should get into this more.
Yep.
But yeah, Running Up That Hill, I love that song.
It's a good song.
It is. Just vocally, I still have no idea what the fuck it's talking about. Like most of Trish was talking about this the other day. She's like, I am discovering there are a lot of 80s pop songs whose lyrics I was confused about what they were. I thought the lyrics were something else than what they are.
Sure, yeah.
And what I'm discovering, she said, is a lot of those lyrics, now that I know the real ones, don't make any more sense than they did when I had the wrong ones.
Yeah, right.
And I still don't know what they're about. I'm still writing.
Good.
I'm not writing every day like I should be, but I'm trying to. I have officially started writing the actual content of Becky James Lohenstein, Queen of the Space Pirates!
Really?
Exclamation point.
Wow.
Yes. Not a lot yet. But I've started. Like I think I said before, the sort of interstitial first person that's going to run through, I'm writing that right now.
I see.
And yeah, it's rough going. This first part, like it's sort of like I said, going through her life and how she gets up to the point of the book starts.
Sure.
And the first part is her life just as a normal person on Earth. And it's, I'm trying to figure out what I need to convey in that and not go on too long, but not be too, it's a little bit weird. But I'm also remembering how this works, and I'm like, you know, just put it on the page.
Yep.
And you'll come back and clean it up later.
That's right.
It's a lot. I'm more acutely aware this time that my protagonist is a woman of color.
Mm-hmm.
And that I want to tread lightly on that.
Mm.
Because I am not a woman or of color.
Right.
And in particular, as I am wont to do in these things, I'm trying to give representation, but I'm also not trying to steal experience. So I put her in a very unusual background. Mm-hmm. Hers in particular is that she was born in the 90s in basically a hippie commune in northwestern Oregon. That, like, managed, like, it was started in the 70s and it actually kind of continued to function
mm-hmm.
up through the 90s. And her dad is a black man and her mom's a Jewish woman.
Mm.
And so I'm getting their history a little bit and stuff like, but I'm trying really hard again not to, like, because obviously both of them are unusual for their background because they ended up in a hippie commune.
Right, right.
But I'm, like, trying to not, I'm like, what can I say about. So, like, I use the phrase Jewish American princess.
Mm.
And I'm like, I feel like that's a fair thing. But her father was very much involved in the civil rights movement to a point and then sort of left. And I'm like, and I'm doing it first person. Yeah. So she doesn't have the discomfort I have in talking about it.
Oh, yeah, right.
But I'm like, there's definitely a line here somewhere where I say X and it's okay. I say Y, probably not. And I'm like, and I have no idea where that is.
Yeah, right.
So I'm dancing around it very, and you know, very quickly, nothing in this whole book or the series of books will be on Earth ever again. It's not fucking going to matter. But just like this chunk is the only part. And I'm like, okay, so I got to very careful.
Well, that is the challenge that white male authors who are tired of stories that just have white men in them.
Yep.
That's the challenge they run up against because... You know that representation is important and you want it. And in some ways, it's not that hard, you know.
Yeah.
Especially if you go over your work and you go, oh, man, I got way too many white people. Well, I'll just change it. You know, or I've got way too many men. I'll just change it. Because the fact of the matter is, you know, women can be just about any type of personality. And, you know, people of color aren't a particular kind of personality. On the other hand, like you're writing something about a person who was born in the 90s in the United States... Well, if they're a person of color, there are some cultural aspects to that that you want to respect.
Yes, yes.
So,
and I don't, I'm certainly never trying to say anything about minority experience or female experience. I don't feel that's my point.
Right,
I'm doing it like I think you are because I find it boring and annoying to write white men. And to be honest, I don't associate well with white men. Yeah. As a trope.
Yeah, right, right.
Like,
me,
I don't,
me neither.
And so, like, that's the only reason. Like, I'm not trying. I'm like, I just want to do this because I'm sick of seeing white guys. But at the same time, I genuinely had people in that draft you edited of Odd Wings tell me the protagonist was doing things that only a man would do.
Really?
Yes.
Huh.
And so, and I want to watch out for that. I don't want to be... Like, I clearly made a standard, cliched, traditional male narrative character. I'm just calling them a woman. And I'm like, I don't want to do that either. But I'm also aware that's a huge subjective spectrum.
But, well, right. And you, and so, again, you don't want to go the opposite way where, what, you don't think a woman could do that?
Exactly.
Or you don't think a woman would do that?
Exactly.
Well, you know, well, yeah. I don't know. I mean, so.
And like I said, some editors said that. Some editors didn't mention it at all. Right. So there's a lot
of obviously, I didn't. I didn't think about that at all.
This
I didn't think about it, but I didn't notice it.
My parents finally got their copy of Odd Wings.
Okay.
And they both read it
very
like
quickly.
2 days.
Huh.
And in fact, my mom read it and immediately called me.
Oh.
But I couldn't talk very long. And I'm like, I'll call tomorrow. And Dad hadn't finished yet. So like, tell him he has to finish so that we can talk about it. First off, they loved it.
Good.
That is unsurprising in my world. I have incredibly, as I think we've discussed before, my mother loved the book before she had seen it.
Yeah, right.
And as I've talked before, there is a, you can have too much of the, you know, sort of blindly supportive parents, and everybody, most people I know didn't have that. So like, what the fuck is wrong with you? And I'm like, I know. It's wonderful in some ways and other ways and not. But also, this set of editors hasn't said a peep about the new version. So it was really nice to have somebody talking about it. And even though I knew, like, there's not a version in which they don't like it,
mm-hmm.
it was nice to hear. But also, A, they liked specific things. And we talked about specific things.
Oh, yeah.
And B, there was this constant sort of feeling from my mother. She loved it, and she knew she would love it. I think she was surprised how much.
Oh.
So I think, I mean, she always expected to be, but I think it was better than she expected it probably would be.
Interesting.
So I feel like that's good. Yeah, that she likes good. It because there's a lot of references in it that are based on real things she knows.
Yeah, right.
So she loves that.
Yeah, sure.
And she and my dad were making a bet over one thing near the end of the book. Is that this place? I'm like, that's totally that place. So they thought that was fun. But my mom also doesn't understand the concept of versions. Versions of drafts.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm constantly like, yeah, I had to work on that because people said that this was really messed up, so I changed. And she's like, well, I don't think it was bad at all. I thought you did it. And I'm like, yes, because I rewrote it. Because people said it was bad. I mean, that's how that works. She seemed to keep having trouble with it because it'd be like, what? People had problems with that? I did. I'm like, yeah, in a different version. I fixed it now.
Yeah, well, I started reading the latest draft, and I had to stop. So I'm going to start over in a couple weeks, and hopefully I'll be able to read it very quickly and give you a little feedback.
Being able to talk details with them and stuff, I think it was a big jump from one draft to the other.
I mean, so far my experience it has.
I think
been,
there
yeah,
was a big jump.
Very
in it,
different.
And I'm pretty pleased with that.
You should be. I mean, I only read the first 16 chapters or so, but it looked very polished.
And it makes sense. And there's sort of a finite number of drafts that you need.
That's right.
And it's basically you write the zero draft, which is the one that nobody should see.
Right.
You just put everything down, and then you go back, and you're like, wow, I didn't even finish that sentence. And like, I killed this person in chapter 3. Why are they here in chapter 5? Like, that kind of shit. Like,
yeah.
I changed the name, which I already fucked up. As I'm putting it into the physical binders, I happen to be dividing on a page where I'm like, oh, look, I got the page break wrong. Oh, look, and there's a typo. Damn it.
Yep.
But there's a draft nobody sees, and you go back through and you make it into a functional story, as opposed to, you know, just you spouting off about this dream you had is what the first, and then you hand it off to people.
Yeah.
And they're like, this has a lot of problems.
Well,
and they tell you what those are.
Yeah, and it's very important, the first draft you hand off, that it's not full of things that you also would notice if you just read it.
Yes, yes, yes. Your second draft, which is really your first draft, is you cleaning it up as best you can with your own perspective.
The worst thing is to say, well, this sentence is bad and this is misspelled. Oh, I already know all that. Well, yes, but
you
need to have cleaned all that up before you have someone read it so they can give you more substantive criticism.
I did have some editors say, like, I didn't go into a lot of depth on this stuff here because I usually wait till later in the process. And I'm just like, if I had known that about you, I would have waited to give you the copy. I would have put you in a later group of editors.
You gave me some very specific... Well, you gave everyone specific instructions.
I feel like I did, yeah.
Yes, you did. It was a very long...
But it also specified...
Nice email.
I'll take whatever. And people did whatever they wanted to do.
Well, I tried to follow your instructions when I did it.
But so you get the real first draft that you think is good.
Yeah, right, right.
And then you give it to people, and they say, there are a lot of problems here.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay. And then you fix those problems.
Yeah.
And you go through it again. And then you send it out again to the same people or different people to see, like, are those problems fixed?
Right.
And they get a little back. And that should be... That's mostly it, I think.
That's mostly it. I mean, if you get a lot of feedback, then you do have to do it again.
I plan, whenever I finally get back from these people, to write basically one last draft and then consider it done.
It might be all you need. That's not
And then probably
impossible.
Try and sell it. But we'll see. And it's going to be a while before I do that, because I'm at least going to have one full draft of Becca James Lowenstein before that.
This is all very exciting for me that you're doing this, because I really think that this is something that you can do really well at. And
it's an important thing to me, and it is only in recent years that I have discovered it is an important thing to me, because I have made myself say, what are the important things to you? You're way past whether or not you're a grown-up. You're in your
40s.
The end is in sight, regardless.
Right. That's right.
So start focusing on what's important.
Yeah.
And The obvious one was my marriage. And honestly, the second obvious one was this. It was like, you got to tell some stories. And that can manifest in a lot of ways, but I feel like this is one of the ways that works best for me. So that's what I'm doing. And yeah, my parents want to keep one of the physical copies and just send me back. And I'm like, that's fine. I'm like, at some point, it's going to be a real life book and you'll get a copy. Like, that some point may be me self-publishing.
Sure.
But that's, I'm going to try every other method I can think of first.
Sure. Because those people know how to market it. They know how
I mean, I'm hoping I get a literary agent.
That would be great.
I mean, that would be wonderful. But we'll see. But the point is, if enough time goes by and I'm like, that's not happening, I'm going to self-publish. The whole point is I want people to read it.
Exactly.
Like, at some point, it'll be a real-life book, even if it's from a vanity press or something.
But you should realize that the success of self-published books, like commercial success of self-published books, has been growing for years.
Yes, but what it appears to be based on is quantity.
Okay.
Most of the somewhat successful self-published authors I know are spitting out books like nobody's business.
And they're doing a lot of self-promotion, too, and like really heavy.
And these are two things I am bad at.
Yeah.
So, but in all fairness, some self-published authors who I like, who I read, who when their next book comes out, I read it. I'm like, my stuff's better than this.
Sure.
So I'm like, could I hit a point where like I put less effort into it and like spit it out a draft early and just then I can do it faster? I mean, I don't know. But that's none of that. That's the backseat. This has to be about the writing. This has to not be about the money. More and more writers are becoming paid for this stuff. The average amount of a published author is getting lower and lower.
Yeah, well, that's true too.
It's
unfortunately
the bottom rung of successful, he said in air quotes, published authors is less than I make, and I make dick.
Yeah, you're right about that. Sad to say.
And that's with a lot of effort on their part, and effort is not something I'm good at.
But then another thing is that some people are using a different business model entirely. They're finding a lot of fans online, and they're making more money through, say, merchandise or things like that.
Yep.
You know, you could find yourself down the road, you know, someone saying, hey, you want to come to our con or something if you're...
Oh, that's the dream for me. That's absolutely the dream for me.
Oh, that'll be so awesome. You totally deserve that.
I'm already... I think it's very possible that next year I'm going to go to WizCon.
Oh, okay.
Which is a very big setting for authors and stuff like that.
Yeah, right.
And just feminist works and things like that. Sure. I think that could be a good environment for me.
Yeah.
So...
Good.
I started reading the first Discworld book over again.
Oh, how many times have you read it?
Once.
Oh, okay.
Didn't particularly like it first time.
Oh, are you liking it now?
Well, that's the weird thing. So, most people don't particularly like it.
Oh,
the
really?
Terry Pratchett's Discworld books, he's got like 30 of them.
I've never read any Pratchett at all.
Yeah. He's got like 30 books in the Discworld universe.
Okay.
They are not in order, and they are not, he's got like 5 or 6 character arcs, like different, like he's got ones that are about the witches of Discworld, and he's got ones that are about death, and he's got ones that are about this particular, the city guards of this particular city and stuff like that. And so just like every once in a while he writes one, oh, it's about these ones, and they're pretty standalone. Like people will say, like, you could just read all the ones about the witches, and like it works fine that way and stuff like that. And the ones that are often the least popular happen to be the storyline of these two characters that are what the first like 2 books are about and a lot of the earlier books are about. And people don't particularly care for the boring. Mm. I'm me. I had to start over at the beginning, mm-hmm. read the first one, which I did before. I'm enjoying it so far. I haven't gotten very far yet, but I'm enjoying it. And I'm wondering a little bit if it's an age thing. Because I can see why a younger me wouldn't necessarily enjoy it. The story is not particularly interesting yet. The language is fun. Mm. And I think older me might enjoy that more.
Mm-hmm.
And also, in my head, it's being full audio cast narrated with some great accents for characters and stuff. But, oh my god, Pratchett does not give a shit about how you're supposed to write stuff.
What do you mean?
He does whatever the fuck he wants. Okay. Breaks fourth wall just whenever he feels like.
Yeah.
He doesn't believe in chapters. But here's the one drove me nuts. I read it and I'm like both like angry and in awe, like all at the same time. He's describing two characters.
Yeah.
His writing at this point is third person omniscient, you know, past tense.
Sure.
That kind of thing. They rode up to the top of the hill. Like, and he's describing these two characters in that same style. And one of the characters, at the time they're being described, is in a cloak that apparently just totally covers them, so you can't see anything about them. The last sentence of the paragraph describing him says, when he will later be seen moving, he will have a noticeably cat-like grace, or something like that.
Okay.
He switches to present tense to tell us what this guy's going to look like later when he might actually move.
More like he was writing a screenplay or something.
Seriously. I'm like...
That's weird.
But it worked. It worked. If I hadn't been writing lately, I mean, I'm sure the first time I read it, I didn't even... Yeah. It's cute, and it works. And so on one level, I'm like, oh, that's amazing. And I'm like, fuck you. That is against the rules. That is super against the rules. That's some shit you scribbled in the margins and then the copy editor accidentally typed it into your paragraph. Like, that's insane. You can't do that. Like, this page should burst into flames. It's on my Kindle. This Kindle should burst into flames. That's not... Nothing works that way. Like, you're breaking two major rules. He switches to present tense to describe what hasn't happened.
Yeah, that's right.
In his past... And it works. Holy shit. He just does not. To be fair, I think it was like the 80s or whatever, if you were an old British white dude, you could get away with pretty much anything. So,
speaking of things that you wouldn't like when you were younger, I was thinking about this just the other day. I've got lots of a pretty good collection of 19th century dark romantic and gothic literature now. Some of which I've read more than once.
Yeah.
Which is pretty unheard of for me to read any fiction more than once.
That's true.
And I was thinking about, you know, I read all this stuff late in my life, you know, in my 40s. All of it, I think. I don't think I even read Frankenstein for the first time until I was in my 40s. And I was thinking, would I have liked this when I was in high school? And absolutely not, I wouldn't have. I think I would have thought, wow, this is really... overwrought and boring, because there are still parts of me that still think that about
some of it. And you can go in the other direction. Part of the thing Trish was having trouble with Poe's was the stupid decisions they sometimes make. But they're like 17.
Yeah, right.
And I'm like, no, when you were 17, that made sense.
So, and one of the, I didn't read Frankenstein for the longest time because I thought it was probably similar to the 1931 film.
Mm.
In fact, the reason I got interested in reading Frankenstein was because someone explained to me that it wasn't. So I said, oh, that might be more interesting then. And it was fantastic. And then that sort of opened the door to me reading, because I'd never read Bram Stoker's Dracula. It's like, okay, well, I'll try reading that. And I thought it was great. And I hadn't read any Robert Louis Stevenson. And I read Jekyll and Hyde, and I thought it was great. So I've just been, you know, so... But I do know that even Mary Shelley's stuff, if I'd tried to read it in high school, I would have thought, too many words, you know, cut to the chase. I don't care about all this romance and people going crazy for nothing. And I would have not wanted
to read recall it. I tried to read Dune in seventh grade and I got a long way in, like probably like 200 pages in or something,
mm-hmm.
and stopped, which for me was unheard of. It was a big thing for me to actually stop a book I'd started reading, but I was like, no, this is so muddled and so dry, no pun intended, and like, fuck it. And then years later, I think post-college, I was like, I really should give that, and I couldn't put it down. I believe I read the first volume in one sitting.
Wow.
Well,
see, I wonder then if I went back and I tried to read, because, okay, so one problem with me reading anything in high school was I didn't like fiction at all. Yeah. So that so
that's
everything
still a problem.
Everything had to overcome that, and a lot of 19th century stuff has all the stuff I don't like about fiction, but I've learned to appreciate it.
Mm-hmm.
When it was my sophomore year of college that I started to think that maybe fiction would be a good avenue for me and some of the things I wanted to say. And so that's when I decided maybe I should read some. And I talked to some friends of mine in college, and that's when they got me hooked on some Golden Age science fiction. And that's when I read Asimov and Clark and all that other stuff. But I still struggled just to understand, why does anyone read this? Because this bothered me or that bothered me.
Yeah.
So I think I just needed to sort of, I don't know, just figure out, like, what is valuable about it. Like, turns of phrase and certain emotional things.
All sorts of things are like this. When you find an entry point,
yeah,
you can appreciate it more. And I have two examples, one of which you're going to hate. when I was younger, beer was disgusting. And I've talked about this before. But I left the country, and I went to another country where beer was very popular, but beer was a much broader category than what I had had here.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned to like beer there, mm-hmm. and I came back here, and I found that I could actually, I mean, I still preferred that stuff, but like I could appreciate beers that before right. I had thought was terrible, because like, I don't know, my palate had, I was catching flavors now or whatever.
Yeah, gotcha.
That
sure.
was like that. And then the other version is I have a friend I knew in college, and he... a young man, adolescence, everything, never masturbated ever in his life. And then he had his first sexual partner and actually started having sex with another person. And he said something about the experience of someone else finding me sexually desirable
sure.
allowed me to sort of look at myself differently. And oh. after that, he did do it. I mean, not all the time, but you know, like he said, something about that experience changed my perspective on myself.
That's interesting.
And I think this is the thing. If you can find the fiction that works for you and identify what it is you like about
yes, it. Yes, that's right.
Then
right.
you can find there's a lot of other fiction that has that in it, even though it has other things that maybe distracted you more the first time you read it.
Yeah, it was like, again, I can still point out things in the fiction that I don't like,
yes.
but it doesn't. I can go past it and move on to the yes. stuff I do like yes. very easily without being bothered.
And I get very discreet about it. There's a couple. I talk about storytelling and wordsmithing, and the truth is there's subcategories in that.
Yeah.
So within storytelling, yeah. there's do you have dialogue that I like? Do you have a story itself, like a plot that I find fascinating?
An arc, yeah.
That kind of stuff. And within wordsmithing, it's do you have turns of phrase that I like, or do you have really good evocative language?
Yeah,
these are different things.
The poetical value.
Yes. Right. And if, but I mean, do you paint a really good visual picture,
right, right.
or is it just fun for me to read your sentences?
Yeah, right,
these
right,
are,
right,
and if I can find one and it's good enough, I will hook into that. And I have read stuff that, like, on every other level it sucked, but it had one of those things really well, and it was worth reading
That's right.
for a while.
Yep, I get it. Yep.
If it's a long series, eventually you're like, you know what, this is not good. But, you know, you can. And then it's just beautiful when you can find a bunch of those
yeah.
together.
It does make me wonder, like, maybe I should go back and try things that I didn't like the first time.
I would recommend that.
There's two reasons. One, because I'm a different person, like
yes.
you were pointing out, but also I appreciate fiction on a different level than I
yes.
used to. So
I highly recommend things that you didn't like, go back and try and read them again. I also highly recommend things that you did like, don't go back and try and read them again, because the suck fairy has gotten to them.
Yes, exactly.
Holy shit.
Right.
But the stuff that you hated, the worst case scenario, you're like, nah, young me was right. Let's move on to something else. That's the worst you got. So, no, I've had a lot of things that I went back and read, and I'm like, oh. Sometimes it's I like this better. Sometimes it's not I like it's better, but it's very different now. I'm getting different things out
yeah,
of it now,
right,
and
right.
that's fun.
Yeah, right.
Draw a thing. We are almost out of time, and if we don't, people will riot if we don't have something.
Really?
I assume, based on the other times we haven't done it and had zero response about that.
Yeah, nobody seemed to
no.
be bothered by it, really.
I assume that they're going to get really angry.
Craig wants to know.
Craig.
Cats versus dogs. Why do some...
Two pets enter, one pet... Live.
Why do some people always give the wrong answer?
Is there anything in there indicating
what the wrong answer is?
Yes.
Yeah. I think just the fact that you asked that question puts you on the outs. it's obvious what the wrong answer is.
Yeah. No, I just like.
But it isn't to me either. What the wrong answer? I mean, it's probably.
I mean, I
don't
know.
You know Craig. I don't know what he would say.
I don't know Craig like that. I don't know. I don't know his pet situation.
Oh.
I
don't.
I mean, you're just. You don't get none of it.
No, I don't really.
Although
when I was younger, I probably appreciated cats more than dogs.
I was going to say, gun to your head, somebody makes you take a pet. My hunch is you're going to take a cat.
Yeah, that's. You're absolutely right about that.
And there are practical reasons for that as well. Cats are 100% way easier to care for.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's just factually true. So if you're a lazy person, cat. I mean, obviously, you can go lower on the scale if you want to get lazier. But between those.
Well, when I was a kid, I liked watching the. I would watch the cats for hours.
Yeah.
The dogs didn't generally do anything interesting. They always stood there and waited for me to do something interesting.
Yeah.
It's like, well, no, the cats would just do interesting things.
As somebody who loves both, I love dogs.
Yeah.
I would say the main reason I don't have dogs is because they're a lot more effort.
Yeah.
Not because I. But I definitely have a preference for cats. They just suit my temperament more. I feel more the sort of languid laziness and casual misanthropy, like, is I emphasize that word, but like very I'm in tune with that. The pack mentality, the excited adorate, like blind love. I'm not there. I think it's because the same thing I'm talking about. I have ridiculously heavily defined ego boundaries.
Yeah.
I am me. I'm very seldom a part of a community or a group or something. I am me. And cats are them. Dogs. No, it's a pack thing. Like, I've never. It's part of why I never got into werewolves either, because the pack mentality and the pack social dynamic, like, has never appealed to me to the point that I like actively dislike it, very much so. And cats are just doing their own fucking thing, all the time. They are them individually.
This isn't related.
And I relate to that.
But I wanted to say something to you about it before I forget. So, I just noticed recently. Seeing my name written out in capital letters, that it starts, my name starts with this and ends with the same shape, except one is with the points down and one is with the points up. A W and an M, right? W.
How are you spelling your name?
Like, if I write it in capital letters.
Oh, your
letters.
First name.
No, William.
I was going for the full name.
No, William.
And I was like, William Wrightem.
W-I-L-I-A-N-M.
Yes, yes.
But then I realized, hey, wait a minute, if you cut the first letter and the last letter in half, it's not exactly, it doesn't exactly work out, but you kind of looks like the word villain.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, half a W and half a half an M.
Two-thirds of an M.
Then it's villain.
Yep.
That's
so
weird. That's weird, right?
What's weird is that this late in life you've decided to get into marijuana.
No.
I mean, or like your neighbor has to just an insane degree and you need to close your windows.
I know, I thought it was weird.
Have you ever noticed we call them fingers, but I've never seen them fing? Oh, wait, there they go.
What are we going to do when we hit episode 666?
Probably bring about the apocalypse. I mean, isn't that how it works? Except, I have heard supposedly Number of the Beast, that is a mistranslation.
I've heard that too.
And the actual Number of the Beast is 616.
Oh, 616?
Yes.
I never heard what the number is supposed to
be.
I've just heard that it's that not, maybe
heard.
Not 666. But 666 is cooler.
Well, and it's, I mean, depending on your particular brand of superstition, it is in the unconscious zeitgeist to such a strong degree that it has gained its own power via belief.
Yeah.
So whatever it was originally meant to be doesn't matter now.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
That's it. I always like, that's a common trope that I like, this idea that the supernatural is fueled by belief.
Right.
I always like that idea that Piers Anthony played with this a little bit. Like the gods are only as powerful as the number of believers they have.
Sure.
And in fact, in certain parts of the incarnations of immortality, they come across gods that like don't really exist anymore because no one believes in them. So they're just like this little spirit somewhere. And I always thought that was a neat idea.
Well, because there's something real about it. I mean, in our real world, the power of any god is how many people believe in it.
Yes. But I think the fiction version is that there's something about the collective willpower, the
magical
chi of the individual, you know, whatever it is.
Right.
And I always think that's fun. I like they suck at it. Every version of this sucks at it. But several, usually horror movies, have made this attempt of a villain, like a supernatural evil, is strong because of the number of people that know about it, and the way to defeat it is to get rid of anybody who knows about it. They tend to do it really poorly, but it's a neat idea.
Well, you know what else I did this week? I read my gingerbread thing again, and I thought, this has some potential, but I still don't know what to do with it. But it was fun to read it.
Run it at Gamacon.
I don't know. I don't know if I could run it.
I don't think you could run a game. I think you'd freak out. We are over time, though, so we'll have to take this up next week. We're making real progress here.
Thank you.
So just pay the receptionist on the way out.
Yep. I'll just give her my insurance card.
If you'd like to know more about...
and my copay.
what Williams insurance looks like.
And the homework that I did.
Yes.
From the last session. I got to turn that in.
Crayon drawings.
You said crayons.
I did.
Well, that's
I did not
use.
Trust you with ballpoint.
Are you making fun of me? Because you gave... you.
Of course not. I'm a professional.
But you... why are you laughing about it? You told me crayons.
Because I'm happy. Because you're making such progress. Is happy.
All right, well...
Dumbass.
I know what happens. I leave and then you and the receptionist talk about me, but...
Have you never listened to the podcast after show?
Yes, I have listened to it, as a matter of fact. I know all about
it. That would be awesome.
You didn't think I did, but I did.
The problem is we need other people. It can't be the two of us. So other people have to have a podcast after show podcast.
What?
Oh, that would be awesome.
It would be awesome.
Fred Savage is doing a thing that's a fake after... like, it's a scripted show that's supposed to be an after show about a fake...
TV show?
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
And I'm like, that's either going to be really awesome or really terrible. And so I want to see what's going to happen. Anyway, go tell us your views on all the shit we talked about. I've already forgotten most of it. And the cats versus dog thing. I mean, fight it out. Get in the comments.
Am I a secret villain?
And is he a secret villain?
Am I like the Antichrist and I didn't know?
Yeah, so comment on that. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com. Also, write in to the hat. TheMagicalTalkingHat.com@gmail.com, and also listen again next week because we're going to do something like this again. Then.
Yet another mystery solved by the hosts of the Magical Talking Hat. Do you have a question that begs to be answered? Then please write the hat at TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. That's TheMagicalTalkingHat@gmail.com. Also, visit the hat at themagicaltalkinghat.com. The music for this episode was provided by Kevin MacLeod of Incompetech.com.